ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 4 टेक्स्ट नंबर 25। संवर्धयन्ति यत्कामा स्वराज्यपरिभाविता दुर्लभानापि सिद्धाना मुकुन्दं हृदि पश्यता। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन। Those who are saturated with the transcendental happiness of rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead are uninterested even in the achievements of great mystics. For such achievements do not enhance the transcendental bliss felt by a devotee who always thinks of Krishna within the core of his heart. Purport. A pure devotee is uninterested not only in elevation to the higher planetary systems, but even in the perfections of mystic yoga. Real perfection is devotional service. The happiness derived from merging in the impersonal Brahman and the happiness derived from the eight perfections of mystic yoga, Anima, Laghima, Prapti and so on, do not give any pleasure to the devotee. As stated by Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati, Kaivalyam naragayate tridashapurakasha pushpayate durdantendra kala sarpa patali protkhata dhamshrayate vishvam purna sukhayate vidhimahendradishchakirtayate यत्कारुण्य कटाक्ष वैभवताम तम गौरमेव स्तुमाम। When a devotee has achieved the position of rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, he thinks the impersonal Brahman to be no better than hell, and he regards material happiness in the heavenly planets to be like a will o' the wisp. As far as the perfection of mystic powers is concerned, a devotee compares it to a venomous snake with no teeth. A mystic yogi is especially concerned with controlling the senses. But because the senses of a devotee are engaged in the service of the Lord, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchyate, there is no need for separate control of the senses. For those who are materially engaged, control of the senses is required. But a devotee's senses are all engaged in the service of the Lord, which means that they are already controlled. Param drishtva nivartate. A devotee's senses are not attracted by material enjoyment. And even though the material world is full of misery, the devotee considers this material world to be also spiritual because everything is engaged in the service of the Lord. The difference between the spiritual world and the material world is the mentality of service. Nirbhanda Krishna Sambhande Yuktam Vairagyam Uchyate. When there is no mentality of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's activities are material. Prapanchikataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastuna mumukshubhi parityago vairagyam phalgugatyate. That which is not engaged in the service of the Lord is material, and nothing thus engaged should be given up. In the construction of a high skyscraper and the construction of a temple, there may be the same enthusiasm, but the endeavors are different. For one is material and the other spiritual. spiritual activities should not be confused with material activities and given up. Nothing connected with Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is material. A devotee who considers all this is always situated in spiritual activities, and therefore he is no longer attracted by material activities. Param drishtva nivartate. Hare Krishna, I'd like to seek the blessings of all the devotees assembled here. This is my first Bhagavatam class. It's like little unusual, because generally in the Bhagavad Gita class the room is empty. So it's little unusual that so many devotees are so kindly sitting here. What I'm speaking is simply I have collected some realizations from here and there and trying to present it as a service to the devotees. So in this particular verse, translation once again, those who are saturated with the transcendental happiness of rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead are uninterested even in the achievements of great mystics, for such achievements do not enhance the transcendental bliss felt by a devotee who always thinks of Krishna within the core of his heart. Now, this particular verse is spoken in connection with the citizens of Maharaj Ambarish. It's very interesting that not just Maharaj Ambarish was on a platform of pure devotional service, but even his citizens weren't interested in going to the heavenly planets, nor were they interested in achieving mystic perfections. They were completely detached for anything material. They're simply interested in Krishna. Nothing but Krishna. Now it's very interesting, because while the devotees of the Lord achieve this perfection of detachment so easily, the other schools of yoga, though they emphasize so much of detachment, they are not able to achieve that detachment. But the path of devotional service, the emphasis is not so much on detachment. Still, the devotee achieves the perfection of detachment. Now if you see Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the thesis on the science of devotional service by Rupa Goswami, in the 64 items of devotional service, he doesn't mention detachment at all. So they are not amongst the items of devotional service. Yet, devotees achieve perfection of detachment. Now, after mentioning those 64 items of devotional service, Rupa Goswami takes a few items which one might feel should have been included within the 64 items, and one of them is Vairagya. And Rupa Goswami says why he hasn't included Vairagya. That is because mental speculation and artificial austerities tend to make the heart hard, whereas the process of devotional service, primarily consisting of hearing, chanting and remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, makes the heart soft. So practice of detachment, there is a risk of making the heart hard. So does that mean that one should remain attached to material things? No. So what is the solution which Rupa Goswami gives? So Rupa Goswami says that simply by the practice of devotional service, one gains a higher taste, and automatically one attains detachment. We see that Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yat Ahetukam. So one on the path of devotional service, Janayati Ashu Vairagyam, very quickly he achieves detachment. So this is the process given by Rupa Goswami. So even though he doesn't mention detachment as a principle directly, the formula is once a person practices devotional service, detachment automatically develops within that personality. And what is the right kind of vairagya to be practiced by devotees? That is yukta vairagya. Rupa Goswami gives this principle. Anasaktasya vishayan yataram upayunjita nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagya muchyate. Now this principle of yukta vairagya, which Rupa Goswami mentions in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's a little sensitive topic. So I was thinking whether to meddle with it or not. It's little sensitive and dicey and very shady. What is yukta vairagya? Where exactly to draw the borderline? Now, why is it a sensitive issue? Why isn't it clear? Why? Because there are very few pure devotees. For a pure devotee of the Lord, it is very clear. Because the principle of yukta vairagya is everything to be utilized in the service of the Lord. So the foundational principle of yukta vairagya is a clean heart with no selfish desires at all. So when the heart is free from any selfish desires, whatever is utilized is used for the service of the Lord. And that is called yukta vairagya, because everything is used for the service of the Lord only. But as long as the heart is contaminated with material desires and attachments, then those material desires come as an impediment for the right execution of yukta vairagya. It becomes a little risky because of those material desires. We cannot utilize. You might start something in the name of yukta vairagya, but very soon the material desires take over. So that's a little risky. But for a pure devotee of the Lord, it's very clear. Yukta vairagya is a very simple thing. It's a very simple principle. No confusion at all. For a sadhaka, yukta vairagya is either a casualty, he uses yukta vairagya and then engages in material sense gratification and then is finished. Either it's a casualty or it's a confusion or it's a conflict. It's a conflict within the heart. You know, should I do it or not and things like that. One of these three C's. When they were constructing the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, they had to decide on the color of the paint for the external walls. So they had chosen various colors and then they approached His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. So which color is most suitable? So then they took him to the hospital and they showed him the hospital and then they showed the arches on the hospital which resemble the arches on ISKCON guest house in Mayapur. And these devotees, they had chosen a particular color for the building and they presented it to Maharaj. This is the color which we have chosen. So Maharaj, he saw the arches and then he told them that you have named this hospital after Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Hospital. And you have designed the arches also for his pleasure, because this ISKCON guest house in Mayapur was very dear to Prabhupada. So I've designed it also for his pleasure. So you might as well choose a color which is very dear to Prabhupada, and that is saffron. And they had chosen another color . I would like to beg apology because some devotees might be wearing this color. They had chosen a pink color. Now Maharaj, he made a very nice statement. He said, pink represents lust and saffron represents sacrifice. And then he said, very few people in this world can distinguish between the two. And it's interesting that this particular color, saffron, is not a very clear color. That is why every ISKCON has a different shade of saffron. Saffron in particular, it's very difficult. Everyone feels this saffron. Every ISKCON temple perhaps feels that this is saffron. And so because it's a, and maybe it's indicative that even pure devotional service or pure sacrifice, it's a very hard thing to make out. As long as we are within this material world, there are always shades of orange in between, which we might mistake to be saffron. Various shades of orange in between pink and saffron. So a conditioned soul is always confused, that is why. What is saffron? What is pink? Very confused. What is pure devotional service? And what is material consciousness? What is Krishna consciousness? Very, very difficult. For a pure devotee, he achieved perfection. It's very clear to him what is pure devotional service. We see the example of Srila Prabhupada. This principle of Yukta Vairagya, I was crystal clear about it. Once a devotee, he brought a clock to Prabhupada. And this clock, it had a dial by which, you know, by turning that dial, you could change the time according to the zones. If you could change the dial, you could find the time in maybe England. If you change the dial, the time in USA. So Prabhupada, he asked, what is the cost? $300. That person deserves this $300 for taxing his brain. Prabhupada appreciated and took that clock. Another time in Switzerland, Shyam Sundar Prabhu brought Prabhupada a digital watch. That was the latest in technology at that particular point of time. A digital watch. So it was a beautiful watch, latest technology. And the top was black and round. And it was completely dark. It's the beginning of digital technology. So what one had to do was press a button. And then in red digits, the time could be seen. So Prabhupada saw the watch, pressed the dial, pressed the button, saw the time, and he said, earlier it used to take one hand to see the time, now it takes two hands. So it took him a few seconds in both cases. One time he appreciated, another time he rejected. Both were technological innovations. Depending upon which was useful for the service of Krishna. A pure devotee, very clear. Within seconds, he can make out, okay, this is for Krishna, this can be utilized for Krishna service, so this has to be accepted. This cannot be used for Krishna service, this can be rejected. Within moments, because the consciousness is so pure, there is no confusion and there is no conflict. Absolutely no confusion. Once in Fiji, 1975, Prabhupada was with Shrutakirti Prabhu and Paramahamsa Swami. Now, Shrutakirti Prabhu and Paramahamsa Swami were young people, maybe around 20, 21 years old. And at that particular point of time in ISKCON's history, like devotees were generally very, very austere and simple. But then, you know, they had found a new thing. Some kind of ornamentation. That is watches. Because you can't do much with devotee attire. Especially during that time, everyone used to have shaved head. All devotees, irrespective of whether they were grihasthas or brahmacharis. So there is nothing which you can do with the hair. And everyone wore dhoti kurta. Nothing much that can be done with that. So one thing that can be done is wear a very nice expensive watch. So this particular Rolex watch, it used to cost thousands of dollars. and devotees had found a liking with it, Rolex watches. And Shudhakirti Prabhu and Paramahamsa Swami were always planning. If someone comes and asks them, because Shudhakirti, they were, one was secretary and another was personal servant of Prabhupada. If someone comes and asks them, what does Prabhupada need? So they had everything ready, that Prabhupada requires a watch right now. So that if Prabhupada gets a new watch, he'll give his Maha watch to them. So they had such plans. That anyone would ask them, they would say, Prabhupada requires a Rolex watch. So in Fiji, there was a jeweler's shop which belonged to an Indian. An Indian gentleman. And so he had invited Prabhupada to bless the shop. And Prabhupada was walking around. And Shrutakirti Prabhu and Paramahamsa Swami were also walking around. And finally, when the tour of the shop was over, Prabhupada and this gentleman, this Indian gentleman, were conversing with each other. And in between was a table, a shelf, what do you call it? A display table, in which were Rolex watches. Because Rolex watches were as expensive as jewels, actually, as jewelry. Costed thousands of dollars, because sometimes they are made of gold also, I believe. I'm not very sure of that. So this was a scenario, and Prabhupada was on one side, and this jeweler on the other side, and Rolex watches in between. And the jeweler is asking, Prabhupada, do you need something? Please, how can I serve you? Prabhupada said, I don't need anything. And this gentleman, he asked, please take one of these Rolex watches. And Paramahamsa Swami and Shrutakirti Prabhu, they're standing on the side and they're hoping against hope that let Prabhupada accept. Let him accept this particular offer. The poor Indian gentleman wants to do some service. Let him be provided an opportunity for service. Prabhupada said, I don't need it. He asked once more, please Prabhupada, please take one of these watches. Prabhupada said, I don't need it. Third time again, the jeweler asked, please, I want to give you something. Please take one Rolex watch. And Prabhupada extended his hand and showed the watch he was already wearing. I already have one. I don't need another. So Shrutakirti Prabhu and Paramahamsa Swami, they were disappointed. But the point is, no conflict in a devotee's mind, a pure devotee's mind. A conditioned soul, temptation will arise in due course of time when there is so much of force, justification, because the heart is not pure. But a pure devotee, very clear, no conflict within, very clear. I don't need it for Krishna's service, so I don't want it. As simple as that. And Shrutakirti Prabhu, you know, in all humility, says that from 1975 to 2001, on every birthday, whenever someone used to ask him, what can we give you for a birthday, he used to always say, Rolex watch. At last in 2001, he lost the desire, and 1 year later, his son gifted him the Rolex watch. So this is the point. That when the heart is very pure, it is very clear what is material consciousness, what is Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, the conditioned soul is bewildered state most of the time, confused whether I am materially conscious or am I Krishna conscious. A sadhaka is confused. Am I in material consciousness or am I in Krishna consciousness? And it is very easy to confuse one for the other. As Maharaj told. For example, today is the day when Prabhupada came to Boston. He came to USA for the first time, and there he wrote that particular poem, Bhagavad Dharma, Markinai Bhagavad Dharma, praying to Lord Krishna that please, my dear Krishna, make me a puppet in your hands. Make me an instrument in your hands. Now if you see Prabhupada, he was out to do the impossible. His spiritual master had told him that you should preach Krishna consciousness in the Western world, which was unheard of, an impossible task, and he was here out to do it. So in one sense, it might seem to be contradicting the principle of humility. Because humility means, I'm good for nothing. People feel, I can't do anything, I'm good for nothing, what can I do? Rana Swami Maharaj, once in a class, he was explaining, this is a class of 1989, he was telling that when a spiritual master gives you an order, you should do this, and you say, I cannot do it. It might seem to be humility superficially. You know, I can't do it. It's too tough a task. How can I do it? I'm so humble. So Rana Swami Maharaj was telling that that is not humility. Because when you say that I cannot do it, when the spiritual master says you do it and you say I cannot do it, what that implicitly means is other things which you are already doing, we are doing it without the mercy of the spiritual master. So if we have the understanding that whatever we are able to do, we are able to do by the mercy of the spiritual master, then even when the spiritual master gives us a tall order, we should know that we will be able to do that also by the mercy of the spiritual master. Because a devotee understands that I cannot breathe. I cannot do anything. I cannot chant my 16 rounds. I cannot follow the four regulative principles without the mercy of the spiritual master. So nothing that I am presently doing, I am able to do without the mercy of the spiritual master. It's all by the mercy of the spiritual master alone that I am able to do whatever I am able to do in devotional service. So if so many things are made possible by the mercy of the spiritual master, why can't this particular thing which he is telling me to do right now be made possible by his mercy? That is actually humility. So Prabhupada had that conviction that everything is happening by the mercy of Gurudev. So by the mercy of Gurudev, why can't Krishna consciousness be spread in the Western world? He was displaying the highest level of humility. That everything is by the mercy of the spiritual master. So even this can happen by the mercy of the spiritual master. And he gave the perfect prayer. Make me a puppet in your hands. A puppet means simply in whatever way the puppeteer now dances on the string, makes the string go up and down, in that way the puppet dances. Means everything is by the mercy of the puppeteer. Nothing is my own. So Prabhupada displayed that highest level of humility. And he calls the Western world Ugrasthane. And then he goes on to stay there and he utilizes modern technology which he sometimes criticized for Krishna's service. Because his understanding was very clear. His consciousness was very clear. So Yukta Vairagya was a simple principle for him even after he went to the Western world. And not just that, Prabhupada's genius was he could empower his disciples to do services which were incredible. For example, what I was telling was Yukta Vairagya, it could be a casualty. Now, some of these initial devotees who came to Prabhupada, because they had just come newly to Krishna consciousness, they may not have been able to effectively and properly utilize this principle of Yukta Vairagya. It can be understood. A new devotee finds it difficult to effectively utilize the principle of Yukta Vairagya, but by Prabhupada's empowerment, they were able to do it. There's a story that this Satchidananda Maharaj says this story. So one man, he was very fond of eating mangoes. And there was a mango tree in a village. And he had heard that the mangoes which are exposed to sunshine, they are the best juicy mangoes. They become more red. I don't have much experience. But that's what they say. So he thought, I want to eat those mangoes which are ripened by the sun, which are on the top of the tree. So he climbed the tree, up and up and up and up and up. Finally he reached the top twigs and he finally found the mango. But then because the twigs were so thin, he became scared. Because if he moves in a wrong way while getting down, if he catches hold of a weak twig, immediately that twig will break and he'll fall to the ground and he'll be finished. That will be his last mango. So he became scared. What to do now? So he started shouting to the villagers, please help me, please help me, I'm stuck here, I'm stuck here. And all the villagers, they came, they assembled there. And they didn't know how to help him. Some of them tried to give him some help. You know, you catch this particular twig. That seems to be a little more strong. But this person was very scared. His intelligence stopped working. And he was simply panic-stricken. So at last they called a sage, a wise sage, near the village, who helped all the villagers in their difficulties. So they called this particular sage, please, this person is going to die. So the sage came. So he took a stone from the ground and he pelted it at this man who was hanging from the branch. So at first everyone thought that, you know, the sage is also trying to get some mangoes down. And this person was also confused. What happened? This fellow has come to bring me down, but he's throwing stones. So the sage took out another stone and threw it again at the man. He really aimed at the man and threw the stone at him. So this person became very angry. Why are you doing this? You know, I'm in such a helpless condition and you're throwing stones at me? Wait till I come down. Then I'll look after you. Then I'll see how you'll throw stones at me. He became very angry. So the sage took another stone and threw it at the man with all his might. And this person really became angry. What kind of a sage are you? Wait till I come down. I'll take full revenge and I'll throw 10 stones at you. Wait till I come down. And the sage took another stone and threw it again. Now the man became really upset. So he utilized every possible intelligence to find out the right twig and he managed to get down from the tree. Just to throw stones at this sage. And when he got down, he started searching for the sage. Where is that sage? I want to throw stones at him. So the villagers, they reminded him. It was the sage's trick for you to get down. Now you see, you already gotten down from the tree on your own. Now this person, he didn't have the intelligence to save his own life. So what motivated him to get down? Some other factors. Similarly, senior leaders in ISKCON tell today that many of Prabhupada's followers in the initial days, they didn't even know what they were doing. Forget about saving the world. Saving their own lives was also not on top of their heads. They were doing something motivated by Srila Prabhupada. Just like this person did something motivated by the sage. So Prabhupada had that purity and empowered genius to somehow induce these Western people, these Americans, to act in such ways that they ended up saving their own lives and they ended up saving the world. So Prabhupada had that power, that purity to do it. Not just utilize the principle of Yukta Vairagya for himself, he could channelize the things of this world in the proper way through his disciples as well. But of course, when it comes now, the principle application of Yukta Vairagya, one has to be cautious and one has to be careful. For example, His Holiness Romapada Swami Maharaj, he makes a very nice statement about Yukta Vairagya. When exercising caution in estimating what is an appropriate application of the Yukta Vairagya principle, he says, it is best to err on the side of caution, especially for a sannyasi, while abuse of this principle is never condoned. So when one is confused, it is better to make a mistake by not applying the principle than applying the principle and abusing it. So better to play safe, that is what he says. When applying this principle of Yukta Vairagya, when one is really not clear, I repeat again, when exercising caution in estimating what is an appropriate application of the Yukta Vairagya principle, it is best to err on the side of caution, especially for a sannyasi, well, abuse of this principle is never condoned. Also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the fifth canto, it is said that Lord Rishabhdev, even though he had mystic powers, he never displayed it. He never used it. So Parikshit Maharaj, he asked Shukadeva Goswami that why is it so? Because a devotee of the Lord is never disturbed by mystic powers. Because he is following the principle of Yukta Vairagya. He is never disturbed by mystic powers. He will utilize it all in Krishna's service. So Shukadeva Goswami answers that Lord Rishabhdev wanted to show to the world that one cannot trust the mind. The mind cannot be trusted. In the name of service, one might engage, one might end up utilizing it for one's own sense gratification. And he gives the example that the mind is like a wild animal. And a hunter never trusts the mind. He's always vigilant about the mind. So, a devotee is extremely cautious in utilizing mystic powers. Of course, nowadays, no mystic powers, but technology is a kind of mystic power only. So, if we equate technology to a mystic power, then even while utilizing technology, a devotee has to be very vigilant over the mind. Because the mind can never be trusted as much as a hunter can never trust the animal. Now, of course, in one sense, because this is a preaching mission, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, one has to utilize this principle of Yukta Vairagya for service. Without this Yukta Vairagya principle, one cannot preach. It's very difficult to preach. So Yukta Vairagya principle has to be adopted. So what can be done? Because it's a risky thing. There is confusion. There is conflict. And sometimes there could be casualties also. So what can be done? One thing which a sadhaka can do is he can be sincere and pray sincerely to the Lord. Please help me. Please help me to utilize this principle exclusively for your service. Give me the intelligence to utilize this facility exclusively for your glorification and for your service. So sincerity, that is the key. And of course, ultimately, what else can we do but have faith that the Lord will protect us? At this point of time, I would like to quote Radha Gopinath Prabhu. Once he was telling that what to do when one is confused, what exactly is to be done, because the consciousness is not pure and we don't know exactly what our motivations are. We feel it is Krishna conscious motivation for anything. we feel it is Krishna conscious motivation, but it could be some material motivation which is hidden and which is surfacing right now. So he was telling that with all sincerity, first of all, one has to consult other devotees and talk to them and take their opinion whether this is actually beneficial for Krishna's service or not. It could be the principle of Yukta Vairagya. Whether actually this is required for Krishna's service, or is it that I am utilizing it for my own sense gratification. One can always consult devotees. But there are certain situations wherein we are cornered, where we ourselves have to take the decision. Whether to go ahead and do it, or shouldn't I do it? So then, what he was telling was, we have to sincerely introspect with a prayerful mood, whether this is actually motivated by Krishna consciousness or not. And if we feel sincerely that this is motivated by Krishna consciousness, then we should go ahead and do it. And then one has to be prepared for any purifications that might follow. Because it might so happen that that could be motivated by material consciousness, and in that case, Krishna will purify us. So when that purification comes, we should be grateful to Krishna. Krishna, I took a bold decision thinking that I was doing it for your service. Now you have revealed to me that actually I was motivated by my own selfish desires. Thank you for this purification. Because we don't have a choice. We have to continue with services. We cannot do paralysis by analysis. So being in a preaching mission, one has to act on the principle of Yukta Vairagya many times. So one has to be sincere, one has to be prayerful, one has to take guidance and shelter of devotees, but ultimately one has to depend on Krishna's protection. Having full faith that Krishna will protect me. Dhruva Maharaj, in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, he speaks a beautiful verse. Satyashisho hi Bhagavan stava pada padmam ashish tatanu bhajata purushartha murte apyeva marya Bhagavan paripati dinan vashreya vatsakamanu grahakatarosman. He says, Satyashisho hi Bhagavan stava pada padmam. Your lotus feet, O my Lord, is the only true benediction. That is actually the ultimate goal of life. Ashish tathanu bhajata purusharthamurti. And those devotees who are purified in heart, who are completely pure, like Srila Prabhupada, they understand that the Supreme Lord is purusharthamurti. He is the personification of all benedictions. So the consciousness is fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. But what about those whose consciousness is not completely pure, whose consciousness is not simply focused on Krishna and the consciousness wavers here and there? What about them? So Dhruva Maharaj says, Apyevam Arya Bhagavan Paripati Dinan. For Dinan, for fallen souls like me, who are infected with material desires, you are like Vashraya Vatsakam Anugrahaka Tarusman. You are like a cow who takes care of the calf. For us, for people like us, whose consciousness is not completely pure, still there is a lot of material contaminations, you act like a cow towards a calf. Now, a cow, it protects the calf. It gives complete protection to the calf, and also it nourishes the calf by providing milk. So Krishna, he is Bhakta Vatsal. So what he does is he protects the devotees. Even the devotees might do mistakes, Krishna protects the devotee. And then Krishna nourishes the devotee in such a way that the devotee will come closer to his lotus feet. Prabhupada says, a devotee, in the purport he says, a devotee must be very sincere in his devotional service. Then, although there may be many things wrong on the devotee's part, Krishna will guide him and gradually elevate him to the highest position of devotional service. That is our hope, that Krishna will give protection. He will protect the devotee and nourish the devotee so that the devotee will come back to his lotus feet. And one has to develop and nurture that simple faith that Krishna is protecting. Krishna's protection is there. Otherwise, it's very difficult. A few days ago, Rajvari Prabhu was telling that someone has written the book, only the paranoid can survive. But when it comes to devotees, the paranoid can never survive. Because there are so many dangers in this world. If a person doesn't have faith, if a devotee doesn't have faith that Krishna will protect him, he cannot render any devotional service practically. He'll always be fearful. What will happen? What will happen? What will happen? But a devotee has, as Radha Gopinath Prabhu says, calculated risk. Knowing that Krishna will give me protection, that Krishna is there to protect, even though it might seem that, where is Krishna? I'll just end with one small story. I tell this story whenever I quote this verse, that at our home we had a cow, still we have, but when I was staying at my home at that time, there was a cow at that time also. So this cow, generally it is said, Krishi Goraksha Vanijyam. It goes in a line. When you have Krishi, agriculture, then you can afford Goraksha. If you don't have agricultural fields, you cannot maintain a cow, because the cow requires place to graze. So first Krishi, then Goraksha, and then Vanijyam. That is the right order. But many times, Krishi is forgotten. Only first Vanijyam and then go. Go for Vanijyam. So somehow, what can be done? At our home also, there was no Krishi, but there was Goraksha going on. Perhaps for Vanijyam and also for domestic necessities. So the cow didn't have a place to graze. So what we used to do is, during the day, we would bring the cow out to a big ground and then tie the cow to a long rope and tie that rope to a pole so that the cow cannot graze freely, but sufficient ground is there for it to roam about within the reach of that particular rope. But the cow cannot go beyond that rope. So this cow, it had a calf. It had given birth to a newly grown calf. So newly grown calf is very nice, you know, to play with and to cuddle and do all things. So I like to play with the calf, and especially when the calf is very new, the cow is very, very protective about the calf. It won't allow except one or two people to take care of the calf. At least our cow did that. I don't know about other cows. So the cow was extremely protective. It wouldn't allow me to touch the calf or play around with the calf. So what I used to do was, the calf is generally let to run freely because it is newly born. It is let to run freely. It won't go to neighboring fields. But the cow will, so it has to be tied. So when the cow is tied to that pole, I used to nicely play with that calf. And it looked like the cow is doing its own business. And it is eating grass. And it is grazing within its small territory, within the circumference of that rope. So I thought that, you know, it has forgotten that I am playing with the calf. So I was playing with the calf. And as soon as I entered within the range of the cow, till now it looked like the cow was in its own world. Grazing, eating, looking here and there. But as soon as I entered the range of that, within her range, immediately she attacked me. And then I understood that although that cow, it looked like it was not observing the calf. It was in its own world. But the cow's protective vision was always on the calf. And when the right time came, the cow was there to protect that calf. Similarly, in the sixth canto, Prabhupada says that it might look as if Krishna has abandoned us. Where is Krishna? He's not there to protect. But just like the cow is taking care of the calf, it's having an eye on the calf all the time, even though apparently it looks like it is doing its own business. Similarly, it might seem that Krishna is engaging in his leela and pastimes and is least bothered with my life. But actually, Krishna's protective vision is on every devotee. And when the right time comes and when the need arises, of course, Krishna is not bound by any ropes. He is free to act in any ways. He is immediately there to protect the devotee. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, looked like nothing is happening, but Narasingha came out of the pillar at the right time to protect Prahlad. So devotee has to nurture this simple faith that Krishna is protecting me. Otherwise, one becomes paranoid. The paranoid can never survive. What is the symptom of a Krishna conscious devotee? Prabhupada mentioned in Prayers of Queen Kunti. Three things. First of all, he understands that Krishna is the Supreme Master. Secondly, I am in danger without Krishna. And third is that a devotee has complete faith that once I have taken shelter of Krishna, he will protect me. These three things. Without Krishna, I have no protection. Krishna is my master. And thirdly, once I have taken shelter of Krishna, Krishna will definitely protect me. Rakshishyati iti vishwasa. This is a symptom of surrender. That Krishna will protect me. That faith has to be cultivated. In the 10th canto, Prabhupada, he speaks about the devotional service of Nanda Maharaj and the residents of Vrindavan. He says, Krishna conscious life means innocent devotional life. It's innocent devotional life. Just like a child is innocent, it has faith that my parents will protect. Similarly, a devotee, innocent faith that Krishna will protect. And he says, one of the processes of surrender is that one should simply depend on Krishna, convinced that he will give one all protection. That Krishna will protect his devotee is a fact. And Nanda Maharaj and the other inhabitants of Vrindavan accepted this very simply. In one class, Radhana Swami Maharaj was telling that we should have that simple faith that Krishna will protect me, and right at this moment also, Krishna, if he wants, he can come out of this light bulb. Right now he can come out of his light bulb to give me protection. That is the simple faith of a devotee. Only then he can continue this devotional service. So this is one of the symptoms of surrender. And we see, once a devotee is convinced with that, then he can peacefully execute his devotional service. And then he reaches a platform, Mukunda Hridi Pashyata, where he can always see Krishna within the core of his heart. And then he is no more allured by heavenly planets, mystic perfections, or any other material desires of this world. Thank you very much. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki Srila Prabhupada ki. Any corrections? Radha Gopinath Prabhu, Vrajvari Prabhu, all the senior devotees, Gorgoin Prabhu, Sri Chaitanya Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.